All right, welcome back everyone to the Deep Dive. We love digging into those fascinating legal cases, and today's pick is a real head-scratcher. We're diving into the world of contract law and those tricky loyalty programs we all seem to sign up for. The kind where it feels like one side gets to make all the rules.
Oh, absolutely. Those terms and conditions we all just click agree on without a second thought. This case really shines a light on how those agreements are interpreted in the courts, especially when things aren't perfectly clear.
It all boils down to this 2014 case from the Seventh Circuit, Hong Bo Han v. United Continental Holdings. It really gets into the nitty-gritty of how judges try to figure out what a contract actually means when the wording leaves some room for interpretation.
And particularly when one party, in this case, United Airlines, basically has sole discretion over how those terms are understood. It's a situation that pops up in so many different kinds of contracts, it's worth paying attention to.
So that's what we're going to untangle today, right? We're looking at how much power that sole discretion clause really gives a company, and how far they can stretch the meaning of their own rules. The big question: was United within its rights to base frequent flyer mileage on that straight line distance between airports instead of the actual miles a flight might take?
Right. With detours, air traffic, all that stuff that can add up. Mr. Han felt he deserved more miles based on the total distance flown, but United stuck with that airport-to-airport calculation. That difference in how they understood mileage, well, that's what sparked this whole legal battle.
Okay, so let's lay out the scene here. What exactly happened that led Mr. Han to sue United?
Basically, Hong Bo Han was a member of United's Mileage Plus program. And, like many of us, he started to notice a discrepancy. The mileage he saw in his account didn't match up with what he believed he had actually flown. He argued that United was shortchanging their members by using that direct, as the crow flies distance between airports and, not factoring in all those extra miles flown due to things like weather diversions or even the extra distance covered during takeoff and landing.
So he's basically saying, hey, my plane took a longer route than that straight line on the map, and I want those miles.
Exactly. And he felt strongly enough about it that he claimed United was breaching the contract they had with him as a Mileage Plus member. It wasn't just about him getting a few extra miles. He wanted to represent a whole class of flyers who were potentially affected, make it a class action lawsuit.
Okay, so I'm curious, what exactly did the Mileage Plus agreement say? What were the specific terms that became so crucial in this case?
Now, this is where things get really interesting. So the Mileage Plus rules actually included this clause giving United sole discretion in interpreting the program's terms and conditions. Now, the agreement definitely mentioned earning mileage, but it didn't specifically define how mileage would be calculated. It didn't clearly say it'd be based on the distance between airports, but it also didn't say they had to track every single mile the plane flew. So there's this gap, this ambiguity in the contract, and that's what created the whole issue.
That makes sense. A bit vague on what mileage actually means, but very clear on United having the power to decide. Sounds like they had a strong legal footing going into this.
It definitely did give them an edge. See, Mr. Han's argument was that the difference between his understanding of mileage being the actual miles flown and United's practice of going airport to airport, well, he saw that as a breach of contract under Illinois law, which is what applied in this case. Illinois contract law usually requires four things to prove a breach: a valid contract, the plaintiff fulfilling their part, a breach by the defendant, and of course, damages resulting from that breach.
Okay, so Han was saying, hey, by not giving me credit for all those miles, United isn't holding up their end of the bargain. That's a breach.
Right. But that sole discretion clause really throws a wrench in the works here. Now, the court can't just use a standard dictionary definition of mileage. There's this whole other legal principle that comes into play when a contract lets one party be the interpreter of its own terms.
Okay, I'm all ears. What's this key principle the court leans on in cases like this?
The key principle is this: when one side is clearly given the power by the contract to interpret its terms, courts tend to go along with that interpretation, even if there are other reasonable ways to see it. Unless, and this is big, unless that interpretation is seen as like completely unreasonable or arbitrary or maybe done in bad faith, basically the court gives deference to the interpretation provided by the party that the contract itself says is the interpreter.
So it's not enough for Han to simply say, I think mileage should be calculated differently. He needs to show that United's method is way off base, not just different from his preference.
Right. He has to demonstrate that the airport to airport distance is not just a different approach approach, but a completely unreasonable one. And that's where the Seventh Circuit's analysis gets really important, because they ended up agreeing with the lower court's decision to dismiss Mr. Han's case.
So in the end, United won. Let's break down why. What was the court's reasoning for siding with the airline?
There were several important points in the court's decision. First, they acknowledged that, yeah, the contract didn't define mileage super clearly. It was a bit ambiguous. But, and this is key, they said that ambiguity alone wasn't enough to throw out United's interpretation or say it was a breach of contract. That sole discretion clause was crucial. The court really put emphasis on the fact that the contract itself gave United the power to interpret its own rules. So, by signing up, members like Mr. Han agreed to let United be the final word, in a sense.
It's like agreeing to play a game by someone else's rules.
Mm-hmm.
If you join the program, you accept that they get to clarify those potentially unclear terms.
Exactly. The second point was that the court then explained why they saw United's way of calculating mileage, that airport-to-airport distance, as perfectly reasonable. They pointed out that it's predictable, it's efficient, both for the airline and for the customers. Like, you can easily figure out the standard mileage between two cities, right? Plus, it's how most of the airline industry does things. It's not like United invented some weird new method.
So it wasn't some arbitrary decision by United. They were just using common industry practice.
Right. And then the court also considered how tricky it would be to do what Mr. Han was suggesting. Trying to track every little mile flown by every single plane, factoring in all those tiny deviations and flight paths, that would be a logistical nightmare. So the court recognized that United's method was a good balance between accuracy and practicality, especially for a program with so many members.
I can imagine that would be a logistical mess. Now, I'm wondering about something else. Mr. Han had argued that United's own website hinted at a different calculation, you know, suggesting mileage meant miles you fly or something like that. Did the court take that into account at all?
They did. Mr. Han pointed to certain phrases on the website that seemed to imply a different method, but the court saw that as extrinsic evidence. It was information outside of the actual contract itself. And they concluded that it couldn't override that clear sole discretion clause in the main Mileage Plus rules. The written contract was king, so to speak, and it gave United the power to interpret, even if there was some less precise language elsewhere.
So that official contract language trumps anything less formal, like wording on a website. A good reminder to always scrutinize the fine print.
Absolutely. One last thing the court addressed was why Mr. Han couldn't revise his lawsuit, you know, file a new complaint with more details. The court basically said that even if he added more facts, it wouldn't change the core issue. United's method was still reasonable, especially with that discretion clause, so letting him amend his complaint wouldn't change the outcome. Kind of a moot point.
All right, so we've walked through the court's decision and why they sided with United. Now let's shift gears a bit and think about what this all means for our listeners. What are the key takeaways from this case?
Well, there are a few important things to consider. First, for anyone involved in creating contracts, particularly for these loyalty programs or situations where one party is managing the terms for a long time, this case shows how powerful a well-written discretion clause can be. If you clearly give one side sole discretion, courts are very likely to uphold their interpretations as long as those interpretations are reasonable.
So if you're the one writing the rules of the game, make sure that clause is in there and that your own interpretation of those rules makes sense and is defensible.
Exactly. And second, for anyone who might find themselves challenging such a contract, it's crucial to understand that simply pointing out some ambiguity in the language isn't enough. You need to show that the other party's interpretation is truly unreasonable, arbitrary, or done in bad faith. That's a much tougher task legally.
It's not just a matter of disagreeing with how they're interpreting something. You need to prove their take on it is objectively out of bounds.
Absolutely. And, you know, looking at the bigger picture, this case gives a certain degree of protection to many loyalty programs that use these kinds of clauses. It suggests that as long as they're being generally reasonable and following industry practices, they're less likely to face lawsuits over minor interpretation squabbles.
Makes sense. It provides some stability for those programs.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a lot about reasonableness here. Can you give our listeners a more concrete example of what that means in practice?
Sure. Think of it like a recipe that says, add a pinch of salt. One person might add a tiny bit, another might add a slightly more generous amount. Both are probably within the realm of what's considered a pinch, right? But if someone dumps a whole tablespoon of salt in, that's likely crossing the line into unreasonable territory. In the Han v. United case, United using a standard metric like airport to airport distance, Well, that's within the range of reasonable interpretation, even if there might be other, more complex ways to calculate mileage.
That's a great analogy. It highlights that reasonableness isn't about absolute precision, but rather staying within a sensible and justifiable range.
You got it. And there's another nuance here about the idea of fairness. It might seem like companies like United have a ton of power with these sole discretion clauses, but the court focusing on reasonableness puts a limit on that power. United couldn't just randomly decide that mileage means something completely illogical,
oh,
right?
Like saying mileage is determined by the number of pretzels they hand out on the flight, which I remember seeing as a funny, the green example in some of the material we read.
Perfect example. That would almost certainly be unreasonable because it has no logical connection to the idea of travel distance. So even while upholding that discretion clause, the court is saying there are boundaries. There are limits to what a reasonable interpretation can be.
All right, so as we wrap up this deep dive into Hongbohan v. United Continental Holdings, what's the main message you hope our listeners take away?
The biggest takeaway is that when a contract gives one side the power to interpret its terms, the central question isn't just about whether the language is ambiguous. It's about whether the interpretation made by the party with that power is clearly unreasonable, arbitrary, or done in bad faith. Just because some of the wording is a bit vague doesn't mean you automatically have a winning argument in court.
It's a crucial difference for anyone dealing with agreements like this. And as you go about your day, think about all those contracts you come across, you know, terms of service for apps, credit card agreements. How many of them have clauses like this, giving one side the ultimate say on what things mean, as long as they stay within the bounds of reasonableness? It really makes you think about all that fine print we tend to ignore.
It really does. And for those of you studying law or working in legal fields, this case offers a really interesting glimpse into how courts try to balance freedom of contract with fairness and predictability, especially in those situations where one party has a lot of interpretive power.
It's a fascinating stuff. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, and we'll see you next time as we continue exploring the intricacies of the legal world.